Here is That Which Is with John Roger. That Which Is presented by MSIA, the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, a movement dedicated to awakening the spiritual heart within each of us. John Roger is the founder and spiritual advisor of MSIA, the founder and president of the Institute for Individual and World Peace, founder of the Heartfelt Foundation, and other organizations dedicated to improving people's lives. John Roger is a best-selling author, and he has been teaching and conducting seminars for many years. Right after John Roger speaks, we'll tell you how you can obtain more information about MSIA.
That means you must then transcend this play of consciousness. And you can do it only by getting above the field of thinking. And you can't get above the field of thinking by going into thinking. You know, by its nature, it has a cap on it. If you go back to the source of thought, if we look at thinking as like up here, and now I'm going to sort of like take Maharishi Mahesh Yoga point of view. Did you ever do that?
Yeah.
Okay. And so let's just call it transcendental meditation. It should be transcend meditation. And they give the analogy of coming down here to the source where a bubble of thought comes up as an energy field, and then that's thinking. What is this? Where in the field of consciousness arises, comes up as a thought, and you do something with it up here as a field of action. What is this? Transcendental meditation tells you that it is the source. So you have heard it said that way. And they say that the source then of thinking, pure source, is unconditioned energy. This is unconditional energy. You come down here to this place here, and you're in a field of unconditional energy. We call this the void. Because you don't know what's in there, you can't tell what's in there, and you can't see what's in there. And it can be conditioned or not conditioned. But we know that thought goes back to thought. Things are returned to their source. There used to be no saying, what goes up must come down. We put stuff on the moon, we said, maybe. They said, well, if that moon hits the earth, it comes down. So that's still out. But it's a little on the unlikely side at this point in our existence. So what you did is you transcend the astral and the causal and the mental and then dropped in here into the void of the etheric. And right above the etheric is the cosmic mirror that reflects everything back on it. There are a lot of mirrors in a lot of the levels. And there has to be a crack in the mirror, or there can't be a mirror. People don't get that one, but you will one day. And that's just called the canal that takes through to this transcendent place that is also unconditioned energy based upon this field of thinking. But it's beyond the field of physics and science. It's beyond the field of description. It's beyond the field of my ability to tell you. It's not beyond my ability to show you there and show you the path and through it and go with you. That is easier to do than to tell you this. It's easier. I do it to people hundreds and hundreds of times while I'm in a room with them. And they don't even know it. And I think, if you're so smart, do you know where your soul is? And I sit there a lot of times and chuckle. And there's been a few people that have been wise enough to look, and they go, guy, you just go in and out of there and in and out of there a lot, don't you? I go, no, it just looks like it. I'm always out. You just happen to see fields of energy that moves and picks up things on the levels. There's very little here. As most people will tell you, who's been with me for a long time. And this guy's a real dump nerd. Fine. That's just fine with me. It doesn't bother me, you know. You call me anything you want as long as you don't call me late for lunch. So what you're doing is now we're going to shift out of this. We're going to keep this as an idea, but shift the focus of attention. That what is in here is the same thing that was up there, or what I call this area here. What is in here is also unconditioned energy called divinity. And divinity is also this transcended unconsciousness. It is also in here. But I described it this way. And I said, forget this as a focus. It's in the background. But I forgot to tell you, bring up the background. Now we're going to talk about this. So now I'm going to interchange the field of consciousness on you. Well, Maharishi got to do it. Why can't I? It's very easy to get vocabulary down. And vocabulary, most often, in Maharishi's terminology, this is where most people went, is to vocabulary. And then sit there with an angelic type of look on their face and spoke as though they had nothing inside of them and spouted the words of vocabulary about this information that the Maharishi told them. And the more they could look and seem and to act like him, the more everybody thought that was true and also workable. It isn't. I was in Karnak University in about above Bombay, 200 or 300 miles, and meeting with the chancellor at the university and taking a tour through their buildings. And he kept talking. He kept using his hands a certain ways. And I said, you're a Sai Baba devotee, aren't you? He goes, yes, how'd you know? And I said, you do the same thing with your hands he does, and that doesn't make you Sai Baba. He got so pissed off. I said, I've never seen Sai Baba pissed off, so that's part where you differ. He said, well, are you a Sai Baba devotee? I said, I'm a devotee to truth. If he's got it, sure enough. If he doesn't, well, I don't know. I'll like him. I was going to see him. If I hadn't been going to see him, there's no way I could have got that tour. And there's no way they would have known that if the chancellor of the university hadn't been a Sai Baba devotee and had been for years, could stand there, put on a cloak and gown and hair and do Sai Baba. And spoke English like Sai Baba would try to speak English. Try. He didn't too good at it. He's better now. In the level of consciousness you stand in, and if we're going to do hierarchy on it and just say that here's the mental part, but not the mental of the spirit mental as an astrocausal mental etheric soul, but the mental in terms of that's what you know. And then at the top here we'll say this is where the soul sits, at the top of the chakra centers. Then there's something that blocks you, whether it's a thick skull, whether it's inadequate nerve sensors, whether it's improper education, or whether there's been improper stimulation of the soul to force its energy impulse down, where you go, what's that? And you start to find the looking of what's that and say, oh my God, that's something that I've always been. That's me, I'm it, we're whatever. At that point, you are now in the soul. But the soul by its nature only goes to soul level because that's its home. But divinity by its nature goes to God, which is where its essence is. So we ride the soul into the essence, ride the soul realm. So many billions and trillions and zillions of souls live in the soul level saying that's the supreme existence, that the Lord of that realm was called Sat-Nam, called True Name. And its initiations that I promise only go to that level. Anything above there is entirely different. It's a whole different process. At this particular point, there's nobody else taking anybody else up. Because most of the people are already said, if you were at the soul realm, you'd say, why go anywhere? And then there's a few people that are still discontented. I was one of them. You know, and it wasn't a discontentment of the summer of discontentment. It was eons of yes and. And I've never found the end to it, which is really nice inside of me. I don't need an end. As soon as you hit the soul, you're at the rest point of eternity. So you're always in a state of rest. But that does not mean no movement. It means no conflict. And wherever you focus your attention and soul, that's what it is. So as fast as you can say something, you're it. So everybody on that level becomes God as a manifester, but not as a creator, which is a different process again. On the mental level, most people are taught the process of creation. They immediately dismiss it when they hit a higher level, saying that wasn't worthwhile. And all we're learning to create is down here in the physical body. So we're in the level of God training down here of what we create positive and negatively that will be used above the soul level in creation, but not in manifesting if we're at the soul level. Travelers come in this field of behavior to die to show you how to get out of it. So from there, their main thing is come here and die and show you how to get out. In the meantime, people try to crucify them. It's always been that. But you're also the traveler, or you couldn't be standing here. Because you'd be too far off to one side or the other in that left or right energy field. But what I'm telling you, some place inside of you knows what I just said. Just knows it. And it will defy you to not know it. You understand what I'm saying? Defies you in the present state of your mind and your intelligence to not know that. And yet you can't put your finger on it, and it's more real than anything else I'm talking about. That's transcendence right there. That was soul transcendence. You were all the way, when I said that to you, you went all the way up into the high place. And that's what you asked to know about when you first stood up there. Now I've answered your question.
Thank you.
Yeah.
In my life, when I'm interacting with my mother, how is it best that I can keep my heart open?
Now, mothers are just a very strange thing called, those are people that gave you everything that you have to start you out in this world. Then you give your mom love and respect that's due her. And that doesn't mean based upon when you think so. So it's quite obvious you're going to have to rehearse how to handle it when she shows up. And if she were going to be dead by morning, what would you want to do for her? And regardless of whether she doesn't disappoint you and lives till the next day. You know, and she could die not because of emphysema, she could get hit by a truck on the way across the street. And if that were to happen, how would you want your response inside of you to be towards her right now? And how do you go about to complete that? What would you want her to know if she were here? If she could hear you, what would you say to her? You'd say, regardless of all of it that happened, I love you. That's the message. That's what you'd say to her. You wouldn't use those words, but it'd be regardless. The highs and the lows, they're regardless of those. I love you. That's what it is. Because that's what it's going to always end up being in the final analysis with everybody. And along the way, Mom, you won't say this, but you probably think you should have. You're a real pain in the ass a few times. Do you know why she was a pain in the ass? Because you kept putting her in the way of things so she got a chance to report to you what she thought. You know what I do when I go into my horses and they're in a corral and they're all running around and they're screaming at each other and they're screaming back and forth? There's about 30 of them. I say, shut up! Now, you people have seen me do that. Raise your hand if you see the horses shut up. Look around the room. See them? They see the horses all shut up because I tell them, shut up. Then I start to deal with the horse that's present. They take off again. I say, shut up! And they shut up. And I don't sit home and practice that. I just know that if you don't tell them what you want, they won't know how to cooperate. But did you hear any negativity with me, or did you just hear loud information? If I'm negative, I go take a board and whack them in the head and tell them, shut up. They'll get the message really hard. Do you people understand there's a difference in delivering information at many levels without being negative? But most of the time when you hear somebody raise their voice, they're negative. And that's not true at all. They may just be more highly informative, called, you're not paying attention, you're not listening, and they're getting above the threshold of where you are with what you're in to get to you. If you're walking across the street and somebody yelled, watch out, and you watched out, you might turn around to them and say, thank you, so I got out of the way of that car. And you may want to go buy them something to prove how thankful you are that they yelled at you. Well, you see, that's to your advantage, and you see it immediately. The instant paybacks. Those are, we go, oh, yeah, thank you, there it is. And we're so grateful, God awful, relieved. But when somebody does that and we don't see the immediate payback, then we put it in a place called, you were verbally abusive to me. You yelled and screamed at me. All those things are true and accurate. They're all verbally abusive, yelling and screaming at you, but you forgot the reason why. Because they cared enough about you to warn you to not to be hurt. And that part has been washed away in the midst of the memory of what they did. It's time to pull those memories back up and say, here's why Mom did that. No wonder she's got emphysema. She was yelling and screaming at me all the time. I mean, if she was, I'd have been hurt a lot of times. And maybe she's got it because she couldn't yell and scream at you enough because she was wore out by what you did. I mean, it's really time to give everybody a break around us, not just you. We've got to just start cutting a lot of slack for a lot of people instead of saying, well, I know they know because I know that they could have known if they would have known. And you go, just erase all that. It's now erased. It's a clean, really clean slate. Now let's just write on it what we really want. That's a choice we have. But when you go into your own death and you're now preparing to die, what is it you'd want your mom to know about you? What she brought into this world? A bitchy lady who was always bitching because things weren't right for her? Or somebody who's grateful for what she got as much as she could? See, that when you're 15 to 18 years old, you're never going to die, so why buy any kind of insurance? Why be concerned about anything? You get to your age, you go, well, I don't know, I think there are real distinct possibilities at this point in my thoughts. When you get older, they're more than distinct possibilities. They take up your time. But it's this time now, as a condensing of time, you're coming to die. What is the message that's left this world? You know, I have never found that when I've reduced it down, it came to anything else but that. And I've taken it the other way, and it's always come to that. I've told people, love is how what this thing is. It's the beginning and the end, and my God has got to be someplace in between. And if I'm not in it, then I've got to look at me to find out what I did not to be in it. Almost 9 times out of 10, somebody went against what my ego pronounced as what it wanted, and everything was right according to my ego. And someplace inside of you, like deep down in the center heart area, you go, right, I knew that. And if you knew that, and you can proclaim it afterwards, and you knew it beforehand, why are you so stupid not to follow it? That's the training point in our life, and the turning point, where we learn to find this and listen to the intuition speak, and we become true to that integrity. And we decide the quality of our life inside is what we're after, not a quantity, but a quality. See, unconditional love does not have a reach out and touching and caring to it. Conditional love does. If I love you unconditionally and I reach out and touch you in the wrong place, you have me thrown in jail. So I'm going to condition how I do that. But it's unconditional from this place that does it. And so you're going to say, well, J.R., to this one person, you shook their hand, and to me, you hugged me, and this other person, you pat them on the back. Why wouldn't you hug them all the same or shake all their hands? Because of who they are. The unconditional loving recognize the restrictions they'd placed on themselves. And so to love them, I came into that condition to do that. If they didn't have it, they wouldn't have been there. Can you see that? With your mom, you got her in a conditional place because she's got conditions. But that doesn't mean that when she's not there, you cannot love her unconditionally. And it doesn't mean you can't say, oh, Mom, I wished I could just put my arms around you and just kiss you and tell you what it is from deep inside. If that's something for you that is very, very important, then you go up and say, Mom, I don't know if you're going to be able to take this. I have something I want to tell you that's maybe nicer than anything I've ever said before. Do you think you can take it? And she may say, give it a shot. Then you just lay it out. And if she breaks down the floor and passes out, you just keep right on saying it. When she wakes up, you just keep right on doing it when she gets up again. Or if she sits there and says, well, I think you're saying that. I don't think you believe it at all. You can tell her, Mom, I'm saying it, and it's not a belief, and I wouldn't want you to believe it. It's what's going on right now. And I knew it might be hard for you. Nevertheless, it's still coming. Here it is. And I'm not going to keep it at you because of your condition. And you have a right to express, but not to inflict upon her. So you tell her, I have something that I want to share with you that I think is very nice. She might not think it's nice at all, but you never asked her ahead of time to judge it. When I was very young, much younger than today, we used to tell people, I have an LT for you. And that always meant to tell them something loving. But you would not tell them until they had a TL for you. And so you'd have something very nice that you heard that somebody said, but you wouldn't tell them until they found out something very nice that they heard somebody say about you. It could just about drive you frustrated. You could lay all night long thinking, who could have said something nice about me? So then you go along trying to get somebody to say something nice about this person. So you could go back to them and tell them something nice you heard. Because you had the chance, you got a chance to go verify it. They had to tell you who said it. Then you got to go ask them, did you say such and such? And see what they'd say. So it was called, you know, the gossip circles I lived in had nice things going. And it was really a mutual admiration society meeting. And it went on for years and years and years and years and years that we did this. Now, you wouldn't hear this every day. Sometimes it's more like Christmas, like nothing new for a year. But it was something that we all loved to hear. And I took from that that I think all of us, or that none of us want to hear bad things said about us, no matter how true it is or how false it is. And after all, it's not their place to say it. It's our place because it's our thing. But we all like to hear something good said about us, and anybody can say it who wants to, because after all, it's their thing and that we did the good thing. And now it doesn't fit in any kind of reasonableness, but that's the way it works in humans. How many of you love to hear bad things said about you? How many love to hear good things said? Well, my hand's up. Nevertheless, people are going to say bad things. I guess it's just to keep us balanced. We don't want you humans to get to be like God. So we'll say bad things so you can feel like hell. I wouldn't want to leave a meeting like this and have people say, it was going really good till JR got there. Then he made us feel like hell. But I'm not too sure that some people haven't walked away saying that. But I think if I were to take a vote, I'd find more on the thank God he was there than the thank God he wasn't. I wished he hadn't have been there. And part of the vote of that is every time we hold something, new and more people show up. And in this work, we attempt to do natural learning again. Come back to you as a being of your naturalness and see if we can kick that off on you again. Because the world will try to take you into its brainwashing, into its advertisements, into its glamour, illusions, and glitter. And a lot of us have got stuck there for many incarnations thinking that was the place. And now we're coming to it where we say, the new car? Yeah, after 5 years, I need a new transmission. So much for new cars. The new shirt, the new pants? Yeah, they wore and ripped up. So much for them. But the new you that continually comes new. See, when you find that place inside that is natural and new, if somebody says, how old are you? You don't have the foggiest idea. You start answering how old your body is. Because why? That's the expected answer for that question. How old are you? My body. You don't say my body, but you say it is, and you give the age. But if I said, what does that mean inside of you? You would give me an intellectual thing called, well, it means so many years have gone by. And I go, what's that? You say, well, the sun and the moon through the seasons and the snow and the wind and the rain. And I go, you're telling me about stuff out there. What is that inside of you? And you'll end up saying, I just don't know. But it's so nice to know that I don't know because I know that. I have no idea what age is. I'm always just me. That place never dies. Because if I tell you when did it begin and when did it end, you just don't know. It's off in the mists. Isn't that a remarkable thing to know that you are a mystical person? You're in the mists of the past and the mists of the future, and you don't know where it is, and all you are now is transcendently being seen. It's like all of a sudden somebody stopped the picture, and here you are, and we're now looking at you, and pretty soon it's going to roll again, and you'll disappear. But you'll always be.
Beirut Be'Sham.
John Rogers' closing words were Beirush Be'Shan, which means the blessings already are. The blessings, the ideas, and the concepts which you've heard are just a small part of the abundance of material John Roger has shared with us over the years. If you would like a free book by John Roger, Journey of a Soul, call this number, 1-800-899-2665. You can send email to servicedesk@msia.org or write to That Which Is, Post Office Box 513-935, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90051-1935. This has been That Which Is with John Roger. Thanks for joining us.